Hi, my name is Vanessa Vallalee and I'm founder and CEO of We Are Tech Women. It gives me great pleasure to introduce you to season 3 of She Talks Tech, the We Are Tech Women podcast. What a season we've got lined up for you. Over 20 episodes talking all things tech from the front to the back of the industry. We've created this podcast for you to keep you informed, to keep you insightful, and to keep you motivated in your tech career. I hope you enjoy it. Today we hear from the amazing senior lecturer in social and cultural artificial intelligence at King's College London. Everyone welcome Kate Devlin. In a world that rewards fast innovation, Kate intends to explore how we can remain responsible, with discussions on ethical development, biases in the tech industry, and the power of transparency. Kate exposes the risks of speaking out and considers where women in the tech industry can go to seek change.
I'm Dr. Kate Devlin. I'm Senior Lecturer in Social and Cultural Artificial Intelligence at King's College London. And today I'm going to talk about responsible tech in a disruptive era. And the title is Move Slow and Fix Things, which I'm hoping might be an antidote to what's actually going on in Silicon Valley. This picture is on the wall as you enter the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in Seattle. And it says, "We are impatient optimists." I really like this. I really like the idea that we want to do good in the world and we want to do it quickly. It's a very hopeful sign. And unfortunately, it's not a very realistic way of doing things. And there are problems when we get too impatient. Mark Zuckerberg coined the motto, move fast and break things, and it got picked up and adopted quite quickly by a number of companies in Silicon Valley. It makes a lot of sense from a business perspective. So you take this idea of rapid prototyping, of agile development, you make your products quickly, you put them out there, you're disruptive, you see great success from that. And you know, if things break along the way, then you patch them up and you move on. Unfortunately, this does not give us time for the contemplation that is needed when it comes to developing tech in a responsible manner. I want to have just a look at a couple of case studies. The first one of these is around self-driving cars. So self-driving cars are touted as being the next big thing. We are going to see them at some point. And the development is ongoing, but it's not without its problems. And that's before we even get into things around the questions of sustainability, for example. So in the development of the software itself, Silicon Valley has been trying to test this out, but it's meeting some resistance. So for example, some neighborhoods, the people don't want the self-driving cars tested there. So it's not in my backyard, a NIMBY type of scenario there. There have also been accidents. There have been fatal crashes involving Teslas and self-driving cars. And naturally, this is worrying. If we look at it overall on a long time scale, then yes, self-driving cars could improve road safety dramatically and reduce the number of human error deaths. However, to get there, there are some issues. But one of the really concerning ones is around the vision algorithms that are used in detecting things in a scene by a self-driving car. And it was found that some of those algorithms are more likely to involve harm of people of color because the vision algorithms can't detect darker skin. This is not the only time that this has been a problem, but it is one example of this. And a lot of this is because when the technology is developed, it's developed in a particularly niche environment. So we are seeing technology being steered technocratically. It's big companies, and it tends to be white men who are both the developers and the directors of the companies. And so tech is often made without much reflection on anything outside of that norm. We know this, you know, we know this as women in tech. We've seen for a very long time that technology is not developed with women in mind. There are many, many egregious examples of this. So yes, we know that there is a problem. And when it comes to automating these things, when it comes to using artificial intelligence, we are inputting our biases into these algorithms. And we are ending up with the biases being both perpetuated and also increased. So we aren't able to de-bias things very easily, if at all. And instead, we see these technologies reflecting human error, reflecting human bias, and in many cases, exacerbating it. Here's the example of facial recognition. So facial recognition initially was seen as being a very useful thing in terms of areas such as predictive policing. So the idea would be that the police can monitor crowds, look for anything that may be harmful. They would be able to identify the culprit straight away. Or if they were looking for particular people, they could run facial recognition software and match faces in the crowd to a database of wanted criminals. This sounds almost reasonable in some ways, leaving aside issues around privacy and prediction. However, when it's put into practice, again, the bias creeps in. There have been court cases over this. In South Wales, in Cardiff, it was deemed unlawful that the police used facial recognition, and they did so without the permission of the people they were monitoring. Again, this happened with the Met Police in London, who didn't check with the facial recognition system and didn't see that there might be biases in it. We know again that facial recognition software is biased against people of colour and will have a much greater negative impact on them. It's also being misused. So we have examples like countries like Russia, where police are targeting people who are peacefully protesting and using facial recognition to identify them. So there's always the opportunity and the chance that this technology might be misused. And we have to think about bad actors. We have to think about what happens if that technology is picked up by the wrong person for the wrong reasons. The past few years has seen this wonderful awareness around ethics, especially in regards to artificial intelligence. And there have been guidelines after guidelines after principles that have sprung up with people saying, this is how we should do it properly. These are the things we should consider. And that's great. And there are a lot of these guidelines. And most recently, in the past couple of weeks, the European Union has also come out with their ruling on this too. So people are paying attention to it. We know that there is an issue. We are calling out those issues. And we know we need to do something. Putting that into play is much more difficult. How do we actually embed ethics into our development? And it's a very difficult thing to do because first we'd have to agree on a unified set of ethics, which is something that does not exist anywhere. So it has to be specifically based on circumstances and on that case. But it's not just embedding the ethics into the tech itself that needs to be done. We need to look more widely at the development environments. We need to be considering responsible research and innovation. If we are making ethical decisions, don't limit it to the software. Every time a piece of technology is developed, there are decisions being made. The developers are deciding what product they want to create. They are selecting the method by which they want to create it. They are choosing the data that they work from, and that data itself is prone to human error, and it's selective, and bias can creep in there as well. And if we think more widely about the environment, what choices have gone into the decision to make this technology at all? What is the motivation behind the technology? And often, you know, the intentions may be good. People may think that they're doing something that will be beneficial, but they don't always think outside of the immediate user group that they're aiming their product at. And they don't always think about the bad actors, and they don't always think about who is being left out of the technology. Who are those decision makers? Who gets the final say on what is being built? And where is the funding coming from? And there have been some concerning funding crises in the past few years, where it hasn't always been obvious where funding has come from. And when it's been examined, the funding has not come from a good place. It has been funded by someone who has gone on to prove untrustworthy or even criminal. Who benefits from the tech? So we have to think about the people who are benefiting, not just financially, but in terms of any other advantage as well. And it also helps if we think about that in the opposite way. Who's being left out? Who is missing from the picture? We have a digital divide, and that digital divide is quite strong when you consider whose data is feeding into the system. So it's not just about the fact that we have many households, even here in the UK, who are not connected to the internet. But even beyond that, if we think about the tech that we consume, so for example, a health tracker like Fitbit, Fitbit takes that information and uses it to drive medical discovery. So they have published medical papers saying we have all this user data and we have found patterns in that data and we are able to make some interesting medical conclusions. That data comes from people who can afford to buy a health tracker and who are healthy enough that their data is, you know, they're active and their data is recorded. And that is missing out those people in society who can't ever afford that tech, don't have that kind of lifestyle. And they're being excluded then from the findings. It's not representative. So we need to think about it. And if we think about that on a global scale, there is a huge imbalance in tech in that the development is coming from the US and China, and the global South is being left behind in particular. So we are not hearing from voices there because the technological capabilities require huge amounts of funding that centers on corporations. It would be nice to think that universities are contributing in some way. Unfortunately, we can't really compete on the scale that these corporations can act at. So here we are as critical friends going, please think about what you're doing. And I think that's where I want to say, move slowly and fix things. The problem with deciding that you want to do things ethically means that there's an appetite to be seen to do things ethically. And that's where there's the issue of ethics washing. We've seen this happen with environmental things like greenwashing. And with ethics washing, this is by Martin Kunin from the University of Limerick. He says there's four stages to this wash cycle. So the first thing is that you use these ethics narratives to support the corporate image. You say, hey, we really care. We really want to do this. And we're going to show you just how caring we are. And then next, they maybe create some kind of AI charter with principles. And you know, they say, this is so important to us. And we will develop this according to our company charter. And then they repeatedly talk about these principles and social good, but they've not actually confronted the issues around social impact and around governance. Governance and regulation are a massive issue. So many corporations do not want to be governed in this particular way. They want to do some self-governing around this, which would be really wonderful if it worked. We haven't seen it work yet. And then there's this what Martin terms the spin cycle. So you hire an AI ethics influencer to spin this, to publicly talk about AI ethics as an action for the company's ethics, to say, look, this is how committed we are. We have a team working on this. That doesn't work. We have a recent example, and that's when Google fired Timnit Gebru. Timnit was hired as an AI ethics researcher. Timnit is one of the most passionate researchers around AI ethics. Here she is being hired for a big company like Google as a Black woman in AI, you know, working to advance the company's AI ethics commitment. And it ended badly. And she felt that in speaking out, she was being victimized because what she was speaking out about did not go down well with the company. And there's been a massive kickback on this, and people are really angry that a company that said they were committed to ethics we're not actually committed to ethics. And it looks pretty dodgy when you think about the work that needs to be done. Just in case you think I'm picking on Google here, I'm not. Here are some other examples of problematic areas where companies are saying that they want to do good things, but the actions don't reflect that. So Facebook has had many problems, as people are aware. Although Zuckerberg has said we can definitely self-regulate, there is really little evidence of that happening. Amazon are going out of their way to stop unionization of their workers. Tesla have been sued for sex discrimination. Reddit was sued for gender discrimination by their former CEO. During her time in the Post, she had made some decisions that were deemed controversial, but this included things like cracking down on harassment. And there was such a backlash that she ended up leaving the Post and stepping down, although her case was unsuccessful. It really draws attention to the changes that need to be made in communities and in tech companies such as this and the problems with trying to stamp out this poor practice. Uber were also forced to pay out as part of a gender discrimination claim. And this was actually one of the things that kicked off the Me Too movement. We know that there have been long-term problems in tech around issues like this, but what makes this particularly more problematic is that these are now being embedded in the very technology itself. And with tech such as AI, it's not at all easy to look under the hood or to dismantle this and try and fix it. What can we do to change things? And if you're like me, over the years, and I've been in tech for about 20 years now, time and time again, we see these initiatives, we see this hope that we can change things for women in tech. And bit by bit, slowly, 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 we're getting there, but it takes a long time. This stuff is systemic. And so I think there are things that we can do, and there is hope on the horizon. One of the things is to listen to your workers. So workers have been fighting back. People have been protesting decisions made by large corporations. For example, projects like Project Maven, which is a US Department of Defense project that was deemed problematic. The workers at Google protested that and the contract was not renewed. Another way is trial by social media. So it turns out that it's very effective to put pressure on companies via social media because, again, the same company that wants to promote their image as being good and ethical tech producers is also therefore more liable to listen to the social impact via social media. So there has been a lot of calling out companies on social media, and I think this is a really useful thing. It's one of the really powerful tools we have, and we can do a lot of activism that way. The onus is also on us as consumers of the tech to voice our concerns and to say that it's not acceptable to ethics wash this work and that we want to see real commitment too, and that we want the tech that we use to be developed responsibly, that we want a responsible research environment, that we want transparency in the system. So where has that tech come from? Who has funded it? What are these decisions that have been made? There's obviously a tension between what companies are willing to share about the process from a business point of view and what we actually want in terms of transparency. But it's certainly fine to be able to talk openly to your customers when what they want to hear is that consideration and care has been given in the development process. To go back to that very first picture, I am an impatient optimist. I want things to happen quite quickly. I'm definitely optimistic. I think that the benefits of tech far outweigh the risks. But I want things to be done in a considered manner. And for me as an academic, that's where I feel that universities can contribute, in that we have the time and the expertise to step back and say, look, we want to critique this. We want to know what you're doing. We want to make sure that there is transparency there. And one of the things about the tech world and STEM subjects is that when you're inside that, you don't always see outside of it. When you're coming at it from outside of STEM, from a critical framework, where you start to examine the context in which it's set, that's the really beneficial thing. So keep asking the questions. Keep making sure that you hold companies to account. Think about what you're consuming. I think we've still got a long way to go, but the more we're aware of this and the more we call out companies that are not doing so well, the better it can be for all of us. Thank you.
Kate, as ever, a wonderful session for this episode of She Talks Tech. We are truly grateful. A huge thank you to all of you for listening. We really appreciate it. If you want to find out more about the incredible Kate, you can connect with her on LinkedIn, or you can find her and her musings on Twitter.